I got maybe 10 miles in before the crowd became so dense my cruiser had to stop in the middle of the road. I gave the siren a blare, lights flashing, but nobody spared me so much as a passing glance. I was dead in the water. Unless I was going to plow through the swarm of pedestrians, my car wasn't going anywhere. Fuck, I said. I killed the engine and squeezed my way out of the cruiser. The crowd was packed so tight that I could barely get the door open. Instinct told me to take out my gun, so I slipped it out of the holster and edged my way through the sea of people, as loud and as forcefully as I could. Police, coming through! Now people were looking at me. There was an identical expression on all their faces, anger with a little bit of loathing, and I was struck by a sudden absurd thought. I don't want the cops to get him. I want to get him myself. Which made no sense. Of course, I was the cop here. Marcy. That it had to be. For a moment, I had forgotten that she was alive in the first place, that Whedon hadn't killed her, and she was broadcasting this anger into the town's collective brain. I shook my head and tried to focus on what I had seen. What I had to do now. Stop the crowd before they kill Whedon. Stop them from throwing that first stone. I had a feeling that the crowd's anger would have developed into violence if not for the gun in my hand, and still, they weren't going to make it easy for me. When I tried to push through, the bodies closed in around me, blocking my way forward, leaving me just as stuck as the cruiser a few yards behind me. I swore again and yanked my neck to stare over the crowd. Nothing but 1,000 bobbing heads as far as the eye could see. With this kind of resistance, there was no chance in hell of me making it to Whedon in time. Fuck this, I muttered. I reared back and elbowed the person next to me in the ribs. He was a small guy who clutched a garden rake like it was some kind of pole arm. He let out a cry and fell into the woman beside him, and boom. Just like that. Domino effect. The crowd's anger dissolved into sudden confusion. I took advantage of the opening and shoved my way through. The tree line was only a few yards away. If I could disappear into the forest, maybe I could bypass the worst of this mob. The confusion lasted long enough for me to break through the edge of the crowd and plunge into the cover of the trees. To my dismay, dozens of other people had apparently gotten the same idea because the woods were swarming with marchers. It wasn't nearly as packed as the roads, but getting through unseen was going to be impossible. And if Marcy was still broadcasting her hatred for all things police, then all these people could turn on me at any time. None of them had brought guns, as far as I could see, but everyone had brought a weapon. Shovels, fireplace pokers, rolling pins, all sorts of household pain. If these people snapped, I'd be one messy corpse. And I wasn't sure I could shoot my neighbors, even if it was to save my own life. I ducked behind a tree, stripped off my holster, and chucked it into the nearby bush. Thank God I was still dressed in civilian clothes. If I had gone barging ahead in full police mode, these people might have torn me apart. They didn't know I was a cop out here. Maybe if I was careful, I could pass as one of them. I kept my gun close to my side and moved quickly through the trees, not quite running, but close. Time was short, and I was straddling a fine line between speed and secrecy. According to the radio in my cruiser, Wheaton's current location was still unknown. But things could change at the drop of a dime. And the second someone spotted him, this whole gig would go up in flames. My phone buzzed suddenly in my pocket, making me jump. I pulled it out and found a text from an unknown number. I skimmed it over, my fingers growing tighter on the phone. Catamount Campground. Sequoia Lodge. They'll know any second now. Go. The inspector. Had to be. He must have gotten Wheaton's location out of Marcy somehow, but if she knew where he was, and so did everyone else. The crowd's attention suddenly shifted to the left, into the deeper reaches of the forest, and I knew too, all of a sudden, and it was so obvious because Marcy had always called Catamount her second home. It was where she met Wheaton, and it was undoubtedly where he'd go to feel safe and alone. The campground was less than a mile away. If I booked it, I could be the first one to find that son of a bitch. I fought the incoming waves of anger, but it was hard. I knew Wheaton was no killer. I knew Marcy was alive and safe in her home with the inspector, but the narrative that she'd woven was insistent. Now that I was so far away, it was creeping back in. How could I have thought I'd seen the dead woman? How could so many people be so wrong about something so obviously true? We'd all seen the crime scene photos. We'd all been numbed by her loss, and we all knew who had done it. We knew Wheaton was a murdering scum who had escaped justice because of a fluke in the system. Maybe I had seen Marcy today. Or maybe I hadn't. Neverglades were a hotbed of strange activity. Is it really so hard to believe that some supernatural force was responsible for my memories of Marcy's house? Hell, Whedon could have done it himself. I wouldn't put it past this motherfucker. He was no better than the things that lurked in the dark, no better than the monsters the inspector and I had taken down. I began to run. The people around me did the same, but they weren't chasing me. They were joining me. We moved on with one mind, one purpose. I was suddenly leading the charge. Whedon was close by, and we would be the ones to find them first. We would be the ones to bring justice to this piece of shit. We ran for several minutes before the trees thinned out and gave way to log cabins and abandoned campsites. Catamount didn't get too many campers this time of year, so it would be perfect cover for a fugitive like Whedon. I'd taken Ruth and the boys here a few times over the last few summers, so I was roughly familiar with the layout. The grounds were deserted. Not a soul in sight. The Sequoia Lodge was smack in the center of camp. It would have been closed right now, but I knew Whedon was somewhere inside. It was obvious, wasn't it? The place where he and Marcy had met, where they'd shared their first dance as a couple. Everyone knew the story. It only made sense that now, driven to desperation, he'd chosen here to make his last stand. The lodge was a sturdy building, with a mottled green roof and walls made of polished wood. The door was shut and presumably bolted from the inside, so I didn't bother trying to knock it down. Instead, I circled the building and looked for another way inside. I could feel the crowd behind me more than I could hear them. A buzzing energy, a surge of excitement, and threatening to spill over into bloodshed. It didn't take long to find my way in. There was a window on the side of the lodge, maybe 7 feet up. It's small, but big enough to squeeze my body through if I tried. I looked around and found a large, smooth rock, half buried in the dirt. I yanked it free, hefted it in my hand, and measured the arc from here to the window. I'd played baseball a lifetime and a half ago, but I felt certain that if I let that stone fly, it would go soaring through the window in a spectacular shatter of glass. All it takes is for one person to throw the first stone. The words of a ghost. I drew back my arm and flung the stone at the window. It broke through with a crash that seemed to echo through the empty campground. The crowd surged forward, and I found myself being hoisted up by hands I didn't know. Till I was staring through the shattered pane at the dark interior of the Sequoia. I reached over the broken glass and unlocked the frame, then pushed it inward. Then I crawled through the opening and landed, less than gracefully, on the floorboards of the inner lodge. The room had once been filled with long wooden tables and folding chairs, but they had all been pushed to the side for the season. And now the place was bare. A thin layer of dust covering most of the ground, except... hang on. Coating wasn't quite even. There were patches where something had disturbed the dust. Not too long ago either, patches looked an awful lot like footprints. They stretched across the open floor and vanished up a flight of stairs into the upper lodge. Whedon, I breathed. Others were trying to clamber in after me, but I didn't wait for them to squeeze through. I lifted my gun and followed the trail of footsteps. The stairwell was dark, and I couldn't hear anything from upstairs except the thumping of my own heartbeat. Blood rushed like a river through my body, but I knew Whedon was up there. I'd never been more certain of anything in my life. The upstairs was a game room, a wide space with a scratched pool table, a few outdated arcade machines. Aside from the stairs, there was a single exit, a door leading out into a balcony that overlooked the flagpole and basketball courts behind the lodge. I'd never been up there in my life, but I knew these facts clearly and with certainty so strong I could feel it in my bones. There were no steps leading from the balcony to the ground, and it was a 3-story drop. Whedon had no route of escape that didn't go through me. I clicked my tongue like I was scolding a bad dog and took a few cautious steps into the room. Whedon, come out. Come out, you sick fuck. The words didn't feel like my own, but they felt right coming out of my mouth. They suited the rage that was building in every corner of my body, like gathering storm clouds. Below me, I could hear the crowd struggling to get inside, but I registered them distantly. Up here was only me and Whedon, a cop and a killer. And I knew one way or another that justice would be served tonight. The floorboards creaked and a body shifted. I turned my gun towards the old Pac-Man machine. My eyes had started to adjust to the darkness, and now I saw a shape curled up behind the game. A pair of legs drawn up against a skinny chest. Anger churned in my gut, but I approached the machine quietly, cautiously. When I looked around the side, I saw Whedon sitting there in the fetal position, a baseball bat in one limp hand and an expression of apparent misery on his face. I had no words left in me to express my hatred, so I lifted my gun instead, my finger drawing back the safety. The ensuing click made Whedon look up. He didn't look surprised to see me there, or scared, or angry, just defeated.
Well,
he said, you're gonna do it, do it. It's better than what I deserve after what I did to her. Tears leaked from his eyes, and I hesitated, but only for a fraction of a second. There were other footsteps coming up the stairs now. Soon the crowd would be on top of us, and if I didn't do this now, they would do it for me. And I couldn't have that. I didn't care about glory or fame, but I knew. I knew I had to be the one to set things right. The gun was cold in my hands, but my aim had never been sure. One bullet and this would be all over. It would be easy. Hell, Whedon himself was begging for it. He'd put down the baseball bat and was staring up at me with despair in his watering eyes. Do it! He yelled, his body trembling. End me! My fingers tightened around the trigger. I could feel the pressure as the bullet prepared to exit the chamber, and then it would be his brains against the wall. The mob behind me could do what they pleased with his miserable corpse, but something lifted my hand at the last second, and even though I pulled the trigger, the shot missed Whedon by a mile. A tiny hole appeared in the wall, letting in a pinprick of setting sunlight. I looked at the hole, and my gun, and the figure cowering, bewildered underneath the Pac-Man machine, and I felt horror shoot through me, stronger than any surge of anger and entirely my own. I dropped the gun, my hand shaking. Whedon stared up at me like a coma patient waking up for the first time in decades. He wasn't the only one. There was a crowd of people standing behind me, but they looked confused, as if unsure of how they'd gotten here or why they'd come in the first place. And as for me, the only word that came close to how I felt was violated. I felt like I'd just come out of a nightmare. But instead of fading as dreams do, the details grew sharper with each passing second. Every choice they make is still a choice. Marcy had amplified the crowd's aggression. She removed inhibitions, made people more susceptible to mood swings and bitterness, fits of rage. But she couldn't force anyone to do anything, which meant that my neighbors were capable of mob violence, and that I could put a bullet through a man's head in an act of vigilante justice, not bat an eye. I'd never seen that aspect of myself until tonight. It scared the hell out of me. What else was I capable of? The mob had ceased to be a mob. A few people had already drifted towards the stairs, breaking the group into several directionless blobs. I picked up my gun and I tried to slide it into the holster. It wasn't there anymore. Whedon got to his feet, wandered into the dissipating crowd, and vanished from my view. No one seemed to notice or care that he was there. Any animosity they felt toward him had evaporated like a puddle on a hot day. I followed the stragglers outside and emerged into a forest cloaked in darkness. The sun had finally set while we were inside, and Catamon had turned into a ghost camp. I thought of my abandoned cruiser, parked in the middle of the road, and the long dark walk back to civilization that lay ahead. It made me want to cringe. Mostly, though, I felt empty. It had been a long sunset, but I had a feeling it was going to be an even longer night. My entire body was aching by the time I got back to the station, but I felt the tiniest twinge of relief when the inspector greeted me in my office. It was strange. The last case we'd covered had me left with a scorched uniform, a third-degree burn, and yet today I felt like I'd been through the worst ringer in my life, even though I hadn't sustained a single injury this entire mission. I hadn't even cut my hands on the broken glass in the lodge. "How'd you call her off?" I asked.
"I didn't kill her. I talked her down."
I blinked. Not sure what I had expected to come out of the inspector's mouth, but it certainly wasn't that.
"We had a conversation about John. About what he'd done to her. I sympathized with her plight and told her that John would certainly be punished for what he'd done. But this wasn't the way to do it. Humans have their own special brand of justice, but they are not gods. They can't just smite the people who oppress them, or they lose what makes them human in the first place."
There was a long silence. "It's funny, isn't it? that out of the two of us, you're the one who understands humanity the most. The inspector's cigar puffed out a cloud of warning red.
Cruelty and abuse are not unique to your kind. Neither is vengeance. Neither is hatred. These are not foreign concepts to someone like me. Now, I may understand them better than you do. Even with all your years on the Force, even with all the things you've seen, I know humanity. Because on some baser levels, we aren't so different.
He looked away and blew a single red ring towards the door.
Love, devotion, togetherness. These are things I only understand because I have observed them for so long, the same way your scientists understand atoms, molecules, the subtler workings of the universe, but like them, I will never know everything. Some things always will be a mystery to me.
I clapped him on the shoulder. Surprising, I think, both of us. And you'll always be a mystery to me too, buddy. But we work well together, don't you think? He actually smiled at that.
Yes. I would have to agree with that.
I know I ask this a lot. But is it really over? I mean, I'm not going to wake up in the middle of the night and go on a psychopathic rampage.
If you do, it won't be Marcy's fault. I managed to close the rift that was feeding her. Her powers have already started to dwindle, and by this time tomorrow, I suspect they'll be gone completely.
Finally. Good news for once. I took a seat at my desk and stretched back in my chair. The tips of my fingers were trembling, but I laced them together and placed them behind my head, hoping the inspector wouldn't notice. By all accounts, tonight had been a victory. Everyone had survived the night, as the inspector had promised, but it still felt like we'd lost the battle. If Marcy had held on a second longer, I had no doubt that I would have placed a bullet between Whedon's eyes. Didn't matter that I hadn't done it in the end. Something real, something dark and dangerous inside of me had reared its head tonight. And you couldn't shove a thing like that back into the darkness.
I know you must be exhausted.
The inspector said, eyeing me suspiciously.
But I think you should write all this down. What happened tonight? If you wait too long, some of the important details might slip away.
I eyed the stack of paperwork on my desk with some distaste. The idea of putting this night into words brought an unpleasant taste into my throat. A rancid bile. But maybe this is just what I needed. A chance to confront this ugly part of me. Get it down on the page where I could dissect it and define it and keep its hideous face from resurfacing again. At least for now. So that's what I'm doing. 10 o'clock in the evening, I'm still here with my pen and this cheap pad of yellow paper. Ruth knows I'm safe at the station, so that's one less thing to worry about, and the inspector has gone off to do whatever eldritch detectives do when there's no mystery to solve. Just me. Me and this thing inside of me. I haven't felt it stir since the game room at the Sequoia Lodge, but I know it can't have gone far. These things never do. And I thought writing about it would help make it easier, but it's only made me more paranoid. It reminds me of what I had said, the inspector back at Marcy's. If I can't trust my own brain, then what else do I have? You have me, the inspector had said. You know what? Maybe that's good enough. I would have stopped writing there, but something around 4 in the morning, after I had headed home and kissed Ruth goodnight and slipped under the covers, I realized I couldn't sleep. So I snuck downstairs to get myself a glass of milk or something, and lo and behold, the inspector was standing in my kitchen. It was a good thing I hadn't gotten that glass out yet, or I probably would have dropped it right on my toe. Inspector, he said in a voice that was a little more than a whisper. What the hell? Did somebody kill the Pope or something? Why are you here?
I can't just drop by and visit,
he said with a contorted half-smile.
Everything isn't always death and darkness, you know.
I got the sense he was telling a joke. The inspector? Surely not. But for the love of me, I can't figure out a punchline. I shook my head and walked past him to the row of cabinets. Not that I don't appreciate your lovely mug and the cloud of pollution that comes with it, but you should really go. If Ruth or one of the boys comes downstairs, they're gonna flip. Inspector gave up all pretense of smiling and grew solemn.
I'm sorry to intrude in your home, Mark. But I need you to tell me what happened tonight.
Tonight? I asked. I mean, tonight was tonight. Nothing fancy. Dinner with Ruth and the kids and an evening of garbage television, the usual stuff. The inspector shook his head.
No. I want you to tell me about Marcy and what happened when you caught up with John. I need to hear it from your own lips.
Marcy? Marcy who? Honestly, Inspector, I have no idea what you're talking about.
In your bag, Mark. There's a pad of paper. I want you to read it.
There's nothing in there except a moldy banana, I said. But I humored him. I grabbed for the bag from its perch. You sure you haven't lost your marbles, Inspector? But I trailed off. And there was something else in the bag, all right. When I drew out my hand, I was holding a yellow notepad. These sheets were crammed with a tight scrawl that was unmistakably my own handwriting. The only problem was I didn't remember writing it. What the hell?
Read it,
the inspector said, a smoky snake curling from his cigar.
Then we can talk.
So I did. I read until the lip of the sun was poking its face above the mountain peaks, and the horizon in my kitchen was lit up in a garnished pink. I finally looked up, and the inspector was staring at me, his eyes focused, unclouded by smoke. This happened? All of it? But I don't remember any of it. I don't even remember writing this down.
It happened. I suppose if you look hard enough, you could find proof. Clippings from the evening news, video footage from a child on their cell phone, but nobody will be looking for proof because no one has a reason to. As far as Pacific Glade is concerned, the last 24 hours never happened.
But you remember, don't you? You're not like the rest of us. He didn't answer. At least not directly. He walked over to the patio window and placed a slender hand on the glass.
I went back to Marcy's house early this morning. Something felt off, and I suspected it was because of her. But the place was empty. She'd packed her bags, left town within hours of the incident. But not before carefully using the last of her power to excise all memories from your heads.
But that's crazy! A person can't just erase themselves. I mean, surely somebody's got to remember her.
On our last case, with the being in the radio, who helped us down at the station?
It was just the receptionist. Hell, Inspector, I don't even know her name. She had glasses, brown hair. She showed us the broadcast rooms and told us about the old station. Why are you asking?
Because your memory's wrong. There was a receptionist, yes, but it was Marcy. Marcy was the one who helped us. Marcy told us about the old station. You don't remember her because she doesn't want you to remember. She found the thread connecting you two and snipped it, along with all other threads in town.
I was starting to feel dizzy, so I took a seat. There's no way a human being could do that. Even if she was juiced up on alien mojo.
She was very powerful,
the inspector said lightly.
More powerful, I think, than she knew. But it's irrelevant now. The world has forgotten Marcy McKenna. I say she's dead, but even the dead are remembered.
I looked out the patio window, blinded by the sunrise. Why do you think she did it? She could have just made us forget this whole thing happened. Why did she completely erase herself?
I think she was looking for a fresh start. That's where our conversation veered last night, and what better way to start over than clean break from everything or everyone you knew?
I picked up the notepad and flicked through it absently. It disturbed me, honestly, how I couldn't remember a single shred of this, how detached I felt from the Mark Hannigan who wrote these words. The guy in these pages didn't feel like me at all. Never in a million years could I imagine myself in some act of vigilante justice. Hunting down monsters was one thing, hunting down a disliked citizen and riddling him with bullets was another beast entirely.
I ought to be going. Your family will be awake any minute, but please, don't hesitate to call me again. Even if it's just for dinner.
I managed to smile somehow. Yeah, it will do. The inspector tipped his fedora to me, ever so slightly. Then he strode to the patio door and disappeared back into the glaring sunlight. I watched his silhouette for as long as I could before the sheer brightness forced me to look away. Sunrises in the Neverglades aren't weird, like our sunsets. The sun flows a perfectly sensible path upward, till it's hovering in the sky like it's supposed to. But that morning, the sunrise seemed to stretch to one elastic movement, leaving the kitchen in shades of vivid pink and orange. I watched the light creep slowly up the wall, thumbing through the papers in my hand. Then I rose from my seat and I dumped the entire notepad into the trash. I didn't remember Marcy. Probably never would. But I figured it was best to give her what she wanted in the end. Fresh starts weren't such a bad thing, really. Hey there, kids. It's me, Mr. Creepypasta, and I wanted to tell you all thank you so much for listening to tonight's story, or watching tonight's story if you're on YouTube. If you're not on YouTube, that means you're probably on the podcast that's available on iTunes, on the Google Play Store, and is now actually available on Spotify, and doesn't use as much data. So, hey, that's a thing. If you guys aren't listening on YouTube or Spotify, then I have no idea how else you could have found me. Unless you found one of those books on Amazon. You know, the Creepypasta Collection, Volume 1, Volume 2. Those are things, too. Oh, well. I don't know how you would have heard me there, seeing as this was recorded, like, 2 years after those came out. Well, anyway. Thanks for listening, folks.
And sweet dreams.